right to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 332, where we will be visiting with Kendall Levine. She's divine. That's how you remember Levine. And also here with us is her mother, Melody. Although I would have said sister, she's claiming mom. So I'm not gonna have that fight anymore. Thanks for being here, ladies. This, of course, is recorded in the home studio. You can find pictures of that if you are a Patreon subscriber of the Cultural Hall. There's a secret group that you get to be a part of. You can go to patreon.com/theculturalhall to do so that way. Now, Kendall, if you don't know, served a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Australia. You've been home now for
5 years almost.
But you came home a little different than other people would come home. First of all, tell people about why you served a mission, like why you wanted to serve a mission, and then tell them about the uniqueness of your mission.
So before my mission, I was going to Casper College on a full-ride basketball scholarship, and because I was supposedly so good at basketball, but when I get there, my talents were just gone. I couldn't stand stationary dribble at basketball. I would figure out all the rules. This one time, I passed the ball to the referee, and so that was... I thought it was a good pass, but it was obviously bad. And so I was just so confused. And that was when I didn't know what was going on with my life. And then that was when President Thomas S. Monson, he announced the age change for sister missionaries, that they can now serve missions at the age of 19. And I knew right then and there that I was going to go on a mission instead and not finish my scholarship out for the next year. So I ended up pushing through this remaining school year, and then got my mission call to Sydney, Australia, and then should I just like
So what was it about either the words of Thomas S. Monson or the spirit that made you just so convinced? I mean, you're doing a basketball scholarship in college. That's a big thing to just immediately give up and go.
Yeah. So like I said, I just completely forgot to play basketball. I wasn't happy. And I was like, what the heck is going on with my life now? And so I was able to come travel home for General Conference in October 2012. And that when President Monson announced the age change for sister missionaries, I immediately started crying. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. That's why basketball sucks right now. I'm supposed to go on a mission instead.
So, Melody, you obviously know she's going to college and doing the basketball scholarship, and now she comes to you and says, age has changed and I'm out. Did you expect something like that?
I kind of wasn't surprised. It's like, oh, okay. You know, she kind of wanted to quit right then. I'm like, no. You've committed. You have to finish out the basketball season, which she did, and you have to definitely finish your first year of college because, you know, she's on a scholarship and it's already paid for. So... you know, of course, we weren't surprised. Her dad was a little like, but basketball, you know, and, you know, he immediately was like, yeah, this is right for you. So
what did you do then in that time? Because you knew very clearly what your goal was, that you wanted to serve a mission, but you kind of had this time that you had to not necessarily wait, but to prepare. What did you do to prepare to serve a mission?
Well, I had to wait the entire summer plus some to import the MTC. And so I just, what did I do? I just worked and I don't remember really studying up on much gospel stuff, but
yeah,
I'm sure because I knew that it was what I needed to do. So it was just all taken care of the way that it needed to go.
Yeah. I remember getting to the MTC and going, I probably should have paid a little bit better attention in seminary, spend a little bit of my free time instead of going on dates or, you know, going to movies, some of those things that I'm like, I'm never going to be able to do this for 2 years. I better get this all in, and probably spend a little more time in gospel study. You get the call to Sydney, Australia. What do you think about that?
Well, of course, everyone wants to go to Sydney, Australia.
Because
it's freaking Sydney, Australia. But I get there and I was so excited. It's already to get to work. I thought I was going to baptize all of Australia. Yeah. I get there. It was not the case at all.
What's the mission like? What are the people like?
Australia? It was hard. People there, like, they're nice people, but to missionaries, I don't want to sound rude about Australians, but they're kind of stuck up.
Kind of stuck up? Like, yeah. A little stubborn, like, traditional, like, I know from talking to people who have served in places like Italy, where the Catholic Church has a tremendous stronghold, like, it's the traditions of their fathers, essentially. Is that what it is in Australia, or is it something else?
I don't know if it's the tradition, but I don't even know how to put that. Like, they're just, like, I don't know how to explain stuck up, because they just wouldn't listen to us. Doors were slammed in my face every single day. We were laughed at, and I just, I don't know how to explain if that's the way that they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Were you frustrated by that?
Yes, because I expected to have so much fun on my mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected to be such good friends with the companions that I had,
mm-hmm.
the sisters that I served with and lived with, but no way. And I was just so depressed. I wasn't happy at all. And I got down on my knees and I prayed to Heavenly Father. And I told him that I would do anything he needed me to do as long as I was happy doing it.
Yeah.
Yep, be careful what you pray for, because you just might get it. So
yeah.
I was then called to train a brand new sister missionary and open up a brand new area. How was I going to train a new sister missionary, an area that I did not even know?
How long had you been out at that point?
I had been out 6 months.
Okay, so, I mean, still relatively pretty young.
Uh-huh.
And here you get this new sister. Where was she from?
She was from, I think, from Brisbane, Australia.
Okay, so she was in country, mm-hmm. serving a mission. Cool.
Yep.
And so you're given the task of, hey, here's a new area. Had missionaries been there before?
Elders have been there before, but
no sisters.
I opened it up with sister missionaries.
Cool. And so so what was that experience like then?
Well, I was terrified, but I did what I needed to do, and it all worked out beautifully.
Yeah.
And to this day, I think that the area that I opened up was just, all missionaries want to serve there because it's just booming with work to be done. It's just fun area to serve in.
What made it that way? Because obviously, I'm sure it wasn't, at least in the way that I know that God works, it wasn't like, hey, I'll do whatever, and then the next day everything is perfect and, you know, it's coming up roses. Like, what kind of effort and time and those things did you have to put in to make that, you know, to kind of meet the Lord in what you were asking?
So in the prayer before I was transferred, I told him that I would do anything he needed me to do. So mm-hmm. he needed me to get the area started up for sister missionaries and just put forth the effort.
Yeah.
So as I worked hard, he blessed me with the things that I needed for the area and for my companion and for those around me as well. So
yeah.
just doing what he needed me to do.
How was training her?
It was good, I think.
Yeah.
What was it like? I'm trying to think back. Like, it was stressful because I was training a brand new sister missionary.
Yeah.
And I was learning with her because she was obviously a fresh missionary too, not knowing anything.
Right.
So we were just on the same page.
Yeah. And she's from Australia, so that's, you know, in some ways she probably knows at least traditions with the country maybe a little bit better.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. That's such an interesting experience. You know, obviously being an elder when I served in most of the areas that I had served in, like, we loved it when there were sister missionaries because the wards love sister missionaries. I mean, they love elders too. Don't get me wrong. But sister missionaries are beloved by members of the church, no matter where they're at.
Good.
And so we always knew that we could get great meals if we had sister missionaries in our ward. We knew that we would get taken care of sort of as a trickle down because we knew they would get taken care of as well. So you're serving in Australia, and did the accident then happen while you were serving with this Brisbane missionary?
So my accident happened about 6 months afterwards.
Okay. So at this point, you'd then been out a year,
mm-hmm.
More than halfway. The vision of home, though you don't think about it, you're not homesick. You're kind of in that stride where you really know what you're doing, you know how to do it, and this accident occurs. So tell people, if they don't know, what happened.
So on September 5th, 2014, my companion and I, we didn't have anything going on at 4:30 in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of odd because missionaries are supposed to fill out their daily planner
mm-hmm.
for a daily plan and a backup plan
mm-hmm.
if that plan falls through. But there was nothing there. So I guess we just drive down the road, what the heck we're going to do, and I saw a double rainbow that I wanted to take a picture of.
Mm-hmm.
So we pulled 15 feet off the road behind a row of trees. And I got out, stopped the picture, and luckily the lady across the street, she saw me get out and take the picture, but turned back as I was stepping back into my car.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was stepping back into my car, someone had fallen asleep at the wheel. And his car drifted right to where I was at, 15 feet off the road. So his car hit me, and his car stopped me, pinning me to the ground. My head shattered his windshield. And the lady across the street, luckily she turned around so she didn't have to see it, but she heard the accident happen, the crushing metal between the cars.
Mm.
And when she turned around, saw what happened, she screamed because she saw that it wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And so she screamed, and her son downstairs heard of the accident too, but thought it was just pots and pans in the kitchen.
Oh.
But when he heard his mom scream, something was definitely worse than wrong.
Yeah.
So he booked it upstairs, and she was pointing across the street to where I was at. And he ran over to me across the street, saw that I was trapped.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that if he didn't get the car from me, I would probably die.
Yeah.
So he ran back to his house, grabbed a car jack, brought it back over to me, jacked up the car, rolled me out into recovery position, and I threw up and I started to breathe.
Oh, my gosh.
Then his mom put over a blanket and just held me in the blanket for about 10 minutes until the ambulance got there.
Oh, my gosh.
And the crazy thing is he was supposed to leave about a half hour prior to go to the gym with his buddies.
Hmm.
But he was just messing around at home, not knowing why. But if he had gone to the gym, would I be here?
Probably not.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
What, I'm assuming, obviously, that you were with your mission companion at the time. What happened to her, or where was she in relation to the accident?
She was in the car the entire time.
Okay. So she had sort of pulled over. You said, I want to get a picture of the rainbow. You step out. Hey, let me get this picture. You get the picture, and then on your way coming back in is when the accident happened.
Yep.
Oh, my God. So
I had opened my car door,
mm-hmm.
about to step in, and that's when the driver had fallen asleep at the wheel.
Oh.
And so his car tore off my car door, and so she got some whiplash from it.
Sure.
But luckily, she didn't see it. But she saw me underneath the car when she was able to get out of the car and see what was going on. So I'm not assuming. Like, I know she was traumatized.
Sure.
Seeing her companion pretty much almost dead.
Well, I mean, as you explain it, with a car on top of her, yeah. and you know, a guy having to get a car jack to get that car mm-hmm. off of the top of her, and yeah. then to be able to pull her out. It's a tremendous just experience as I hear you tell it. And if we can pull the curtain back a little bit, we've actually done this interview already one time. I had Kendall and Melody here, and because of a mistake of mine, somehow that was not able to be recorded. It's interesting to me as you tell the story. Do you see it in your mind? Whatever you remember. Is it the telling of other people telling you what happened or what? Like, I hear what you're saying, but what is the experience that you have as you're telling this story? Does that make sense? I mean, is it too deep?
A little too deep.
Okay. It's like, as you think about it, because you say that as you're stepping back into the car, do you remember stepping back into the car?
I don't remember about 2 weeks prior to the accident and okay. about 5 months after the accident. So
and in that time, the 5 months after the accident, you were in a coma. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. So these are all accounts then, for all intents and purposes, that are coming together from the woman across the street, from your companion, and anything from the guy who actually hit you as far as his account of what he saw or what he experienced?
He obviously was asleep, so he didn't see anything. But
It's mostly just hearsay.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, it's definitely all hearsay because right. she doesn't remember a single thing about it. But she, you know, the accounts of the woman across the street and her yeah. son, you know, they knew exactly what was going on. So most of our information is from them
yeah.
and from the police that were on the scene and, you know, being able to describe exactly how she was hit, figuring out that her head shattered the windshield,
oh,
somehow threw her forward and he drove up on top of her. And, you know, the car was resting on top of her chest, preventing her from being able to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she doesn't remember any of that. And
yeah.
and we don't either. We're all her dad and I, we only know the story because of the accounts from everybody else.
Right.
And so kind of putting it together and putting it into place. So,
yeah, it's such a fascinating thing because I don't think aside from like surgeries that I've ever been unconscious. Right. And so for you to know like that, there's this experience and this whole thing happened that for all intents and purposes changed your life. But in that moment, like you, like probably a grace from God to not have to be traumatized by that experience. It's just, you know, what you hear from other folks. So I want to pivot for a quick second and then we'll take a break and go into the second block. But, as a mom, Melody, so you send your daughter off and you go, all right, in God's care and she's safe and, you know, the best 18 months and we'll hear back from you again when you get back. You get the phone call that something like this has happened. First of all, without a doubt, I would presume you knew you know exactly where you were. So just walk us right into phone call or visit from someone with all this.
We had moved to Hawaii after she left on her mission. So my husband and I were in Hawaii. And about 6 months after we had moved there, our state president came to our door knocking at about 10:30 at night. And mm-hmm. we're like, why is he here so late? But we put our clothes back on. We went and we talked to him really quick. Hi, how are you doing? And he says, I'm not here on a social call. I'm here to inform you that your daughter in Sydney has been in an accident and she was hit by a car and, you know, this happened. And, you know, we're like, okay, well, you know, she likes bruises. She always thinks those are cool.
Right.
And we're like, it's Kendall. She'll be fine. You know, she's on a mission. She's a missionary. Of course
right.
she's going to be fine.
Right.
And he told us she was in a coma. We're like, oh, well, that's a really cool
yeah.
part to the story. She's going to love telling that. But then he says, but she is alive. And we're like, whoa,
yeah.
what do you mean she's alive? That means she very well could die and she might not make it through the night. And,
right.
and so anyway, it was a little traumatizing, a little shocking. And we just kind of went numb. And I think we were numb for years after that.
Really? Years?
To emotions that would just totally bury us because it was so hard, so traumatizing to be so far away, to have to take that long flight and to be able to watch our daughter in a coma for so long and not knowing what the outcome is going to be. And, you know, our stake president, he gave us both blessings that evening.
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife stayed with us for about 4 or 5 hours.
Wow.
We were able to Skype the doctors, you know, FaceTime the mission president and kind of figure out what's going on. We saw our daughter in a coma in the bed over
was
FaceTime.
That a, was that better or worse? In some ways, I would think that would almost be worse to...
I don't know. I was
yeah.
numb. It's like
yeah.
our emotions. And I really think it was a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, those blessings prevented us from going to that ugly cry phase and
yeah.
that losing it and just having a complete come apart.
Yeah.
And it just kind of held us until we were able to deal with it ourselves. You know, we weren't able to deal with the trauma that we went through and the things that we had to deal with for a year or two.
Yeah.
And until we were to that point, till she was better and we knew she was going to continue to get better.
Right.
We weren't able to feel emotion. I mean, not saying that we didn't care.
Right. No, but I very much understand that
right.
feeling of just being numb where in instances where you are very aware that you should be feeling more than you're feeling, you just go, okay, well.
Yeah, we just went on autopilot and
yeah.
just did it every day.
I want to take a break and come back in the second block, and I want to talk about what that airplane flight must have been like and the experiences before Kendall comes out of the coma, and then pick it back up and wake her up, as we will, and get you back in on this. We'll come back and do that in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Hi, friends. Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails with feedback from customers. Here's one. Dear Dan, I want to thank you for the help you gave my mom with her computer. She's gone from being frustrated to fascinated. I'm not overjoyed, though, that every picture of me that she has is now on Facebook. But she loves the computer and is happier than I've seen her in her whole life because of your team. You guys are the best. Signed, Happy. Dear Happy, in our company training meetings, we always teach everyone to treat every customer like they're your mom. At PC Laptops, we'll hold your hand every step of the way. Get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for just $799 with a lifetime warranty at any PC Laptops location. $799? You can't beat that. While supplies last, quantities are highly limited. Please visit us at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. I know you'll be happy too. Hey, Ma!
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. If you have not yet done it, hop online and check us out, theculturalhall.com, or if you're on any form of social media, we are there as well, at The Cultural Hall, and we do these episodes. We try and get a couple in a week. You can just subscribe, that way you never miss one. Wherever you're getting this podcast or this show available in podcast form, just click subscribe, and then you won't miss a single thing. Talking with Melody and Kendall Levine. Melody, you obviously, as soon as possible, hop on a plane to Australia to go see Kendall. In that time, you had the stake president over, he gives you a blessing, and then until you touch down in Australia, what's going through your mind?
Just hoping that she lives. Mm-hmm. hoping that we don't get there and, you know, call the mission president and find out that she passed or find out that something else terribly went wrong. And, of course, we assumed as soon as we got there and we went in to see her that she was going to wake up right. and say, Mom, what happened? Yeah. Why are you here? This is my mission, you know. But it wasn't like that at all. In fact, when we landed, some of her family members from a war that she served in, they picked us up and drove us another 3.5 hours down to Canberra because she was a distance away. So we still had that drive all the way to get there. And
am I ever going to see my daughter?
I know. It just felt like it was never going to end. And, we kept feeling like we were going to break down and that we were just going to cry because we couldn't take it anymore. And as soon as we got to that peak where, you know, the tears were ready to fall, we would just have a peace wash over us and it would just be taken away. And we took a breath and we were able to make it to the next time that happened. But I remember on the way down, they wanted to stop at McDonald's to get something to eat. And, you know, it was after midnight. And I just remember thinking to myself, you know, I'm so grateful that they're driving us down. But why the freak are we stopping?
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm not hungry. Yeah. I don't care if you're hungry. Let's go.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't say anything. Yeah. I just shut my mouth.
All right, hurry. Let's and give me a number one. That's fine since we're stopping, I guess. But come on, can we get?
Right. But I didn't even order anything. For one, I wasn't hungry. I had no appetite. And I didn't want it to take longer, whatever I ordered. I'm like, just get water, please. Let's just go.
Kendall, do you have siblings? Is it just you?
I have one older brother.
So he's out of the house at this point.
We lived in Hawaii. He was attending BYU Hawaii.
Okay.
And he did live with us at the time.
Okay. So did you say, hey, hold down the fort. We're going to go take care
of
your sister? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. So finally, after what is probably a day-long airline trip and then the trip to McDonald's, which I think is hilarious, right? Hey, do you mind? No, we're just going to... No, I know you want to see her, but we're just... you make it to the hospital and what?
We look in and we see her just laying there lifeless in the bed. She looked absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't break any bones, no cuts.
Is that true?
Yeah, nothing.
She had road rash.
She had a little bit of road rash. Well, we think it was from the engine underneath when she was trapped under there. Her face was touching the engine block. And
okay.
So it's a little bit of a burn.
Okay.
It's not visible now. I don't know where it went. Yeah. But no broken bones. She was hit at about 35 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
And, I mean, she was a solid bruise down the one side.
But yeah.
No tears, no cuts, anything. She just looked perfect. And so it didn't look like anything was wrong with her. She was
right.
just laying there.
Like in some way, you're probably like, okay, what was this? Some sort of sick joke to bring us here?
She looks fine.
Yeah.
She'll be better.
I mean, really, right? And then you get explained the seriousness of it. So then what? You're able to look in and then are you able to go in to visit with her? And what is that experience in the hospital like?
We were in ICU with her for about 4 weeks, just watching her every day. Just, you know, was she going to wake up? And they initially put her in a medically induced coma. Once she was hit, she didn't wake up for, you know, at least a month. She was automatically just unconscious the entire time. So they put her in a medically induced coma just in case she was to wake up and they didn't want anything to happen. She needed to heal. They right. realized she had a traumatic brain injury, a severe traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
And so we're, you know, every day we're just waiting, and they would try to take her off the medication, the induced coma, and, you know, just wait to see if she would wake up. And she just never did. And uh-huh. her heart rate would just raise and things would start to go wrong. And uh-huh. so they had to kind of keep putting her back under until it was safe enough to bring her out. And it took about 3 to 4 weeks uh-huh. of trying to wean her off of that before her eyes started to pop open. But the lights were on when nobody was home. Uh-huh. She was just catatonic. Vegetative is what they call it.
How was that? I mean, we obviously, spoiler alert, we know how it ended up right. that she's here with us and chatting with us. But how was that for you faced with this idea that this beautiful, talented, athletic daughter could, I mean, this could be the existence.
Right. And of course, we were afraid of that, and fears always crept in. But there was just something in us and our own personal revelation that uh-huh. my husband and I had, that we knew that this just wasn't the end for her. That she was going to get better. We mm-hmm. didn't know how, but we just knew things were going to be okay. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if she was going to be the same girl that she was. We didn't know if she would ever play sports again.
Sure.
But we just kind of, we both had the feeling that Heavenly Father has something for her to do.
Awesome.
And that, you know, she was going to serve, continue to serve. And we thought, you know, ideally, yep, she's going to wake up from this coma. She's going to grow her hair back. She's going to be fine. Stay on her mission. Just wear a wig. And, you know, she's going to be fine. And we're going to be able to go home and, you know, things will be back to normal. But that wasn't the case, of course. She yeah. spent a lot of time in a coma. We eventually flew her back to Hawaii with her skull in the back of the plane in a frozen box. They had to remove a third of her skull because okay. her brain was swelling so much.
So they just like put it in an igloo cooler and then exactly. like, we'll get to that.
Exactly.
When you're ready, we'll let you have that back.
Yeah. So 5 weeks later, she was able to have that put back in wow. once the swelling receded. And then she spent another 5 weeks in the Hawaiian hospital in a vegetative coma. Okay. So her eyes were open. We were trying to get responses out of her, and just nothing was happening.
Wow. What, for folks, because you guys were originally from Tooele?
Stansbury Park.
Okay,
Tooele
County. Which is a suburb of Tooele, which is a suburb of Salt Lake City, for people who don't know. What was going on back home? I know there was a huge effort of people kind of uniting in prayers and love. Talk about that.
Oh, I think we don't even know the vast majority of everything that actually happened. Mm-hmm. But I had a friend and my sister that were really great at gathering some funds. And, you know, they at a football game, I think that night or the next night, they sent around a bag or a box for collections if anybody wanted to donate. Mm-hmm. They talked about what had happened. There was all kinds of things like that, people donating to the bank and just to help with whatever things we were going to need. I mean, we spent a whole entire month in Australia, and yeah. of course, we had expenses. We had sure. to eat. We had to sleep somewhere.
But not at McDonald's, because like we don't have time for that, right?
We never had McDonald's the rest of the time.
So where do you come back into this then? Do you remember Hawaii and coming to there? Or where do your memories pick up, Kendall?
My memories pick up about 5 months after the accident, okay. so I remember nothing of Hawaii.
Okay.
So
that's back in Utah? Is that mm-hmm. where you pick up memory?
At the University of Utah, that's where I started to pick up memory, like you said.
Okay. So I don't know if you've ever realized this before, but your parents waited until you left on your mission to go to Hawaii, and then you don't get to remember any of the time that you spent in Hawaii. I hope that they have taken you to Hawaii since.
They have, and okay. we're going back soon. So.
Good. Okay. Then all is right in the world. We're good as far as that. So you're up at the University of Utah, and then you start having memories. What do you do in that first little bit that you remember?
I don't remember the first little bit that I was there. All I know that it was difficult for the therapist to even stand me up, because it took about 3 therapists to stand me up and move a leg, because uh-huh. my body just was crazy at this point.
Now, you might hear three therapists. You should know that Kendall is not a large person by any means. So it's just a tremendous amount of work to get your body to essentially do anything at this point.
To behave.
To behave.
She was just a limp rag doll. She had no muscle tone. She lost it all during the coma, just laying there with no activity whatsoever. Yeah. She just had nothing. She couldn't even hold her head up.
Huh. So they obviously do physical therapy to start bringing that back. So in the last time, this is at when you come to and you start remembering, that's when are we talking timeline? 2015?
15. It was about 15? Almost 14. January, yeah, February-ish.
Of 2015. Okay. Yeah. So obviously between then, January, February 2015, and now, like you walked here. You walked into the studio. You have a cane that I presume is just in case. I think that you could probably walk without it. I'm not putting that on you. But, I mean, you walk really well. Your mom is helping you by getting you around to different places. And we'll get to that in a little bit as to what you've got going on now. But, like, you are a literal miracle.
Yeah. I still fall down every day regardless of the canes.
Yeah.
And sometimes it hurts. And the other time I'm just like, how the heck did that happen?
Yeah. Sometimes it's the pride that gets hurt a little bit more than the body.
Yeah, a little bit, probably.
So in those, if we're talking January, February 2015 to present day, this is recorded in July of 2019. That's 4 years. What have you been doing?
I'll go into therapy.
Uh-huh.
Trying to recover, trying to walk again, get my body to behave again. And since the accident... since I got out of the hospital, wards and stakes have asked me to share my story with their youth.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since then, I've just been sharing my story as to my life before the mission, why I went on a mission, what happened on the mission, my accident, and everything else that's happened since the accident. So since my hospital days, I've just been sharing my story, been able to travel around, do firesides for the youth also.
Do you like it?
I love it.
How come?
Because my missionary work stopped 6 months early. But with these firesides, I've been able to do more missionary work than I could have ever thought possible.
Hmm. Like what kind of response do you get from the youth that you're able to speak to?
Pretty much every fireside, people come up to me. They're like, thank you, Kendall. I really needed that. It's so inspirational that you push through the struggles and you're just still fighting. So it just kind of keeps me going. Like, okay, if this helps this person and these people, then I got to keep going at it because I don't want to let people down.
Yeah.
If they look to me as an example, then I'll suffer a little bit more.
Have there been times you've wanted to give up?
All the time. And so I'm like, I'll take a rest and just throw myself a little pity party. But I'm just like, no, I can't do this forever. I gotta keep going and keep progressing. Because I don't want to be the squirrel in the bed like the doctor said I would be for life.
And that really was the diagnosis, as I understand it, right? It was, she will never walk again. She will not be a functioning person, for all intents.
Right. Once we got to Hawaii, the neurologist looked at her MRI scans of her brain, and he said, I've never seen so much damage. She will not get out of a bed. She won't walk. She won't talk. She won't feed herself. She's just going to be a vegetable. You need to find a home and put her in it. And every day he would come in and tell us, oh, she's still not responding. And, you know, have you looked at homes? Have you found homes to put her in? And, you know, it was just awful. You know, for 2 weeks straight, that's all we heard from him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just knew that we just couldn't do that.
Something that you sort of felt within?
Exactly. Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
It's, to me, I hear it and I just think of the tremendous amount of people. If you listen back, and when we come back in the third block, I'll give you the number of the episode, but we were able to speak to your husband, your dad, about what was going on, and the tremendous amount of people, again, and you referenced this, that were praying for you, whether they were just praying for the missionaries of the church or specifically for Kendall Levine to be able to make her way through this. That's a pretty awesome blessing, and as I think you recognize, responsibility on the other side of it, right? Like they're praying for you, and now you've been given this gift from God, and there's this purpose that comes with it. Now, recently, you had the opportunity to go back to Australia. Talk a little bit about what that was like and how that opportunity came about.
Well, it was a Christmas present. My parents surprised me with tickets to Australia, so it's like, cool, I'm going back to Australia.
Was there some worry about going back? Like, listen, I had that place the last time I was there. You wouldn't believe what happened.
I wasn't scared about it. Like, it was definitely good to go back and finish on a better note than in a coma, obviously.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was going to be able to share my story with the words that I served in as well. So it was all worked out the way that it needed to.
So you were able to, if I'm hearing correctly, like speak and do firesides in the wards that you actually served in on your mission?
Yes.
Were there still people there that you remembered from serving your mission?
Pretty much everyone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Really?
Yep.
And they remembered you, obviously. The story is probably a legend in the mission, I would assume.
Yeah.
And then also you had sort of a unique experience to be able to go back and visit where this whole thing took place. Talk about that.
So going back to the accident site, I tried to rack my brain to bring it, like try to remember it, but nothing came back to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool to like be there and just be like, oh, this is where my life was changed. This is where my life was saved. Almost died, then saved.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good to be there and just end on a better note than, well, let's see. The things that happened that day of the accident.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, the physical stuff, it was hard. The things that have gone from it, it just blows my mind that things have just gone better since that day. So,
was there a familiarity to that place? Because you had been there before. But I wonder, like, there have been places where maybe I haven't necessarily physically been there before, but like I just come in and it has maybe a different feeling. Maybe familiarity isn't the right word that I'm looking for, but where you came and had a different sense of feeling about that place than maybe other places you visited when you were back in Australia?
I felt nothing at that place. I'm like, I tried to rack my brain as to what we were doing at that time, the neighborhood that we were in, but nothing.
And now, Melody, were you with her at this time?
Yeah, when we went back.
So as you go back to the site, you'd probably had seen pictures as she had as well.
We went there when we went to get her in Australia while she was in a coma. We were able to visit the site as well.
So was there a different feeling then from that initial time that you were there?
I want to say no.
Okay.
It was just, you know, we were there and, you know, of course we recognized it. We remembered it and we took pictures, so we knew, and Kendall knew what it looked like as well. But it was just kind of like, wow, cool, you know, closing a chapter. Like, this is done, and, you know, it was a beautiful day. And it was just kind of cool. The eerie part was when we went back to the hospital and visited.
Now, was it to go back to the hospital just to visit the people there that had taken care of her? Or
yes, and somebody from the hospital media department heard that we were there, and they wanted to do a TV episode or a newscast.
Mm-hmm.
So they invited us there, and so many of the nurses were able to be there.
Wow.
A couple of the doctors were there. A lot of people were there that remembered her, and for some reason, this American girl that was serving a mission – a Christian mission, they just remembered her, and they remembered that the outlook did not look good, and that, you know, basically they didn't think, you know, they would see her again, and and that she would be there looking the way that she did.
And the doctors were just walking through the door.
Yeah, the doctors were just like, oh my gosh, we never get to see this end of it.
Mm-hmm.
We just get to see the trauma and just, you know, kind of try to keep them alive and have the best outlook. But they never see people return. So they were really in awe at her.
Yeah, and probably ways that you don't understand, being able to inspire those people there as well, Kendall.
Yep.
These nurses had followed her for the last 5 years on her Facebook page. And so
awesome.
Yeah, they've watched the whole time.
Now, with that experience about being able to go to the site too, you also had a unique experience getting to meet a couple people, or to see a couple people, I guess I should say, since you had met them previously. Tell me about who those people were and what that experience was like.
Well, obviously, the family that saved my life.
Uh-huh.
I met them before. And the good thing, the best thing about it was I was able to meet the man that caused the accident. So it was kind of scary, like, being there. Like, I was there at the accident site with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so this is where you changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way, or in a bad way, and in a really good way. So, and I want everyone to know that I hold zero hard feelings towards this man.
Yeah.
It was a total accident. And things have gone better since it. So, and when I told him, I took him to the side when I saw him. And I said, I hold zero hard feelings against you. He's like, thank you, Kendall. I really needed that. So, I think it was definitely more important for him to hear that I hold zero hard feelings for him.
Yeah.
But also that I'm able to move on and just continue my life as to what I need to do now.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who I don't think that could have done what you did. But conversely, that's a tremendous amount of courage on the behalf of that guy as well to come. Because who knows what he's going to get, you know, if he's gonna be treated negatively or anything like that. And it's a tremendous, whether we recognize it or not, each of us who are members of the church, whenever we act in any way, I mean, think of how many times within a ward you think that you hear that someone doesn't come to church anymore because of the way that someone acted towards that person. They're not a spokesperson for the church, but they're just like, that was like that. But now this person has this tremendous blessing of an experience from you. It's just, it just continues to be another part of a different kind of mission, like you alluded to earlier.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, this man was absolutely incredible. His family was just beautiful. They were lovely. They greeted us and mm-hmm. spoiled Kendall. And, you know, he something we didn't know is that he and his wife had been following her story all along since the first week.
Because
she has a different Facebook page that a friend put together, you uh-huh. know, so people could follow what
Tell
was going
what
on.
Tell people what that is if people want to check that out.
Prayers for Sister Kendall Levine.
Okay.
And a friend just started that, and so there's been a post every single day since the accident with a picture or a video just kind of following her journey. And so he had been following that. He had been watching and seeing that she was getting better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was devastated. His family was devastated, and it had an effect on their lifestyle and, of course, their emotions as well. They went through a depressive time. But, you know, he told Kendall, he said, you know, you have inspired me this whole time, that you just keep going and, you know, things terrible and I changed your life in a bad way. But you still keep going. And, you know, she explained to him, you know, it wasn't the way that I expected my life to change.
Sure.
But it has changed nonetheless. And it wasn't your fault. It wasn't intentional. But, you know, she's very happy with her life and the way that things are now, the way that it has turned.
Yeah. Both up to this point and when we talked last time, I only asked her about that. What was that experience like for you? Were you having a different kind of hesitation, or was it harder for you to be able to forgive this man?
Not at all.
No.
We never, even from the beginning, we had no hard feelings towards him because we understood it was an accident.
Yeah.
We understand that, you know, people get tired.
Sure.
Yes, you, of course, should pull over. I mean, my husband and, you know, everybody gets tired. He has the same thing, like, oh, I'm really sleepy. And it happens. It's human nature. It's not intentional whatsoever. And, you know, this happened to this man who had a family, you know, that he was taking care of as well. And, you know, to just be able to see and to understand that everybody has something in life, you know, whether they did something unintentionally, maliciously, they have a life too. And so you have to consider that and know that, man, this poor family, we felt for them. We're like, you know, this is terrible for them.
Yeah.
And we had wrote a letter to the judge in Australia. Their rules are a little bit different there. And we wrote a letter to the judge and we asked him, you know, please do not put this man in jail. He does not deserve jail. It was not
Could he have gone to jail for just falling asleep?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Didn't I just say that too, like previously?
That you...
Did I just talk about that?
No.
Oh. Must have been thinking of another
time. Must have been the last
Continue.
Time.
Continue.
Yeah, the last time we did this. No, you're fine.
Anyway, so And, you know, he was guaranteed almost to spend about a year in jail.
Oh, wow.
And we just thought, no, that, you know, we don't want to press charges. We're not pressing charges. Please do not do this. And they said, well, unfortunately, in this country, it's not that way.
Right.
We have the law and we have to punish, or, you know, whatever way that they do. And we're just like, oh, my gosh. So we wrote a letter to the judge. And mm-hmm. and while we were there, we had just found out that that because of that letter, that judge read that letter to the man when he was in trial and said, you know, because of this, I'm not going to put you in jail because oh, wow. you have a family that you have to take care of.
Yeah.
And so we're like, oh, good. Yeah. We're so glad, you know, that he didn't have to go through that.
It's interesting. You talk about how it's an accident, but still there are people who would hold grudges or
right.
who would be very angry about it. I think it speaks a lot to you as a family. I think that's tremendous. I would hope that I could be that big of a person. I don't know that I would, and hope to never find out, truthfully.
Who would?
Yeah, no, right. But your courage is so inspirational. And then I think of my own and I'm like, well, okay, well, I'm, you know, it happens to those who can deal with it, I guess is the thing that, I don't know. That sounds maybe weird. For me to say that way. Let's take a break real quick. And when we come back, I want to talk about, what the future is for Kendall. So we'll do that coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something. And then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. This is all recorded and a behind-the-scenes thing. Kendall, after we have stopped recording the two times, has said, this is recording, right? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, no. Let's listen to it. I want to make sure that it's there. So we are good. And that's just part of the fun personality that is Kendall. And I felt bad when I found out that it didn't record the first time, but I like having you guys back again. I won't make you guys do this a third time, or, you know, maybe sometime down the road we can be able to be chatting about something else. I guess maybe that, that pivots right to where I want to go. Like what's the thing you're doing, speaking at girls' camps, at firesides? Is that, what you see yourself doing for the unforeseeable future?
Probably. So that'll probably continue for life, just sharing my story with the youth and people all around the world and mm-hmm. the church and everything. And also, coming up this fall, I'm taking another step, going back to school. So
are you really?
I am.
Nice. What are you going to study?
No idea.
Yeah. So some things change, but some things stay very much the same. Huh?
Yep.
Nice. That should be kind of an interesting experience, right?
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
I'm kind of nervous, but I definitely have to do it.
Yeah.
I've had too many signs as to keep pushing it off, to not keep pushing it off.
Yeah, yeah. Has there been a book written about this experience? Has that ever been a thought?
It's come, if people have brought that across.
Uh-huh.
There hasn't been one yet. Uh-huh. There is a company called Steery.
Okay.
And they are doing a documentary.
Oh, cool.
On Kendall's story. And so he's a local company here in the Salt Lake area.
Okay.
And his gathered a lot of the photos and the pictures because I've done that ever since the beginning, taking photos and pictures, not intentionally for this reason,
right?
Just kind of because I did, and it kind of has benefited the future. So he's gathered that, gathered stories. He also had somebody in Australia, a videographer, follow her down to Canberra where the accident site was. He was able to video record Kendall meeting the man that had hit her.
Oh, wow.
And able to get some footage of them at the I wanted to say the crime scene.
Yeah.
At the
too
site.
Much Law and Order SVU, Melody. Come on.
At the accident site, as well as the man that pulled her out from the car. So he was able to get interviews with both of them and with Kendall and with us. And so I haven't posted that. That's for the Steery documentary that's coming out.
That's awesome.
Probably in the next 2 to 3 months.
So. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Any idea what it'll be called? It's probably on them, right?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah. That picture that you were guided to get to the side of the road and take of the double rainbow, does that picture exist?
It does exist.
People can see it?
Uh-huh.
Where do they see it?
On my Facebook page, on the Prayers for Sister Kendall Levine page, and on my phone.
Yeah.
And pretty much every newscaster that's come and done a story on her, they all ask for the picture. So it's out there, definitely out there.
You keep it on your phone. Why?
People always, always ask.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because interesting. I guess as I think about it, I mean, that's, yeah, I don't know whether I would keep that, but I guess where, you know, it's a beautiful picture and to what it means for your life. I don't know. I guess for some reason, as I put that back, there are things that have happened in my life that have certainly guided my life, and I just kind of push past it, and then I, you know, don't ever look back. But that's interesting. But yeah, I would imagine that people are like, "Yeah, show me the double rainbow picture that you took."
Yeah, it was taken maybe 20 to 30 seconds before she was hit, so that was the last thing in the camera.
Unreal.
And rainbows that are meant of a new life, so. Uh-huh. It's cool that I took a picture of a rainbow. That's a sign that I'm going to get a new life.
Yeah.
Because like a mom said, 30 seconds afterwards, I did get a new life.
Yeah.
Been hit by the car ever since then.
Have you guys had, has anyone from like the leadership of the church been in touch with you guys? Like any of the apostles or did anything like that happen?
Of course, when she was in a coma, we had... the area presidency for the Pacific Island missions. Uh-huh. They were very much in touch with us and the medical missionary department. They kept in touch with us throughout just to follow her and see that she was doing okay, give us advice, whatever we needed. And of course they have still followed her this day. And, you know, we meet up with Elder Gifford Nelson about every 6 months. And, you know, he greets her, says hello, sees how she's doing. We have had opportunities to meet a couple others, and specifically Jeffrey R. Holland.
Cool.
We were able to meet him. And
you should see Kendall's face light up.
Yeah.
I know. Here's the awkward position that I've sort of put you guys in, is that it's a little bit of like, hey, and so we had the opportunity to do this, and I know you to be very humble people, so I know you don't want to be braggy about it, but it's a cool opportunity to meet an apostle, whether it's from an accident or at the airport and you happen to be landing at the same time.
Right.
I appreciate that your face told every bit of that, Kendall, as you just lit up. So what was that like then to be able to, I'm assuming, he wanted to hear the experience and to check in with how you're doing.
It's a great story. She shares it in her firesides. Go ahead and tell the story.
Oh, gosh. If I control myself, just don't mess with Elder Holland.
Yeah.
No one should mess with him ever. So we were able to go to his office because my dad was getting a high priesthood.
Uh-huh.
So we had Elder Holland give it to him and sitting in his office. He was sitting on his desk. I was in front of him. He was talking to me. So, Kendall, how's therapy going? What are your plans for schooling? Whatever else he said, I don't remember.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, guys, don't mess with Elder Holland.
Yeah.
I told him, like, but hold up. We're not here for me. We're here for my dad. And he put his hand up immediately, and he said, don't rush me.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, sir. So I shared my firesides. If I can't rush Elder Holland, you definitely cannot rush the Lord in his timing.
Yeah. That was a great lesson too, and an awesome and also unique experience. I'm glad that you share that with folks and that they're able to know that that occurs. Plus, it also...
It's funny, so...
Yeah, and it's a great glimpse at your personality, too, where it's like, no, guys, it's about my dad. Hold on.
Don't rush me.
Hold on, Kendall. Don't rush me. So going to school, we talked briefly before we turned on the microphones this time. You're going to a young single adult ward. Do you live at home still?
I do.
Okay. Life just kind of is in that avenue, right? Trying to figure out what you want to do professionally as far as life goes and looking for that someone.
Just like all the returned missionaries.
Yeah.
Like they don't know what they're doing with their life. Yeah. So I'm one of those. I'm now experiencing it being in the returned missionary life. So
yeah, that's awesome. Good to have her home, Melody.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
She's lying.
What's that?
I think she's
like, yeah. She's like, we ask the three questions of everyone who steps here into the cultural hall, and I'll ask those of you now. The first question is do you have a calling currently? And if so, what is it?
Well, I don't want to say because I don't want people to, I don't want my bishop to hear that I don't have a calling.
Okay.
And then put one on me.
Okay. Okay. Well, I won't tell him to listen to this. Deal. What about for you, Melody?
We're actually new to the area that we just moved to. We just moved to the Orem area.
Nice.
So none of us have a calling yet. We've only been there maybe 5 months.
Okay.
So.
Man, that is not like my Salt Lake ward. We are a week. We're like, you come to church here and do you want, 10 ministering families there? And then, right. Yeah. The second question that we ask anyone is, if you could pick a calling for yourself, either make one up or pick one that exists, what would you pick?
Well, about a year ago, I got this thought that it'd be cool to teach Relief Society and share my mission experiences with the Relief Society.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was given that calling to be a Relief Society teacher, so I was able to teach the women in my ward.
Cool. So
that kind of was good, but now it's on the down low.
Yeah.
As I moved.
Yeah. Don't pay any attention to what she's saying right now.
Don't rush me.
Yeah. Don't rush me. I love that. And Kendall did the whole hand up too. And I can see Elder Holland. I had the opportunity when I was on my mission to hear Elder Holland going back, obviously, speak. And he pounded the pulpit in a way that I have never seen a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints pulpit be pounded. It was tremendous. To be in the Kirtland Steak Center and watch him pound that was pretty remarkable.
Don't mess with him.
Yeah. 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 It was 100% the message. He didn't say don't mess with him. His message was don't leave the church. And then he cried. He cried in the message while he spoke to us. It was pretty interesting. Melody, what for you? If you could pick a calling, what would you pick?
Oh, gosh.
Or you can make one up.
Make one up. I don't know. I've held a lot of different callings, mostly in young women's.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the calling I have right now of just being Kendall's side note.
Mm-hmm.
Following her, getting her to all of these firesides and things that she has to do. And just, I guess I'm like her manager.
Yeah.
She's my chauffeur.
Chauffeur, yeah. I kind of enjoy that. Although that's really not a church calling. But,
no, that could be a made-up church calling.
But, I would enjoy something that is just on Sunday, mm-hmm. Sunday only, teaching Relief Society or something like that. Nothing that I have to be so involved with because I think mentally I still can't yet.
Yeah.
But just something simple.
So a question that dawned on me back when we were in the first block of this. What have you noticed about Kendall since the time that she came out of the coma, in the growth from that time to present day, Kendall, recording this for now the second time, what maybe one or two things have stick out to you as growth moments or as spiritual moments or moments that have impressed you? Just a couple of things in the time that you've been that. She calls you chauffeur, you call yourself manager, whatever it is, that role that you're feeling. What are some things that you've noticed?
Yeah, please say. So
well, You know,
don't rush her.
When she first came out of the coma and started to wake up, it took a couple years for her to completely be alert and mature because it really set her brain back. She was like a 6-year-old, a 12-year-old, and it took a long time for her to be able to get that maturity back, which we didn't know if it was going to come back. But it did. It took a couple years, and now she's, you know, 25. And she holds steady to that.
Yeah.
But just to see as a parent, to see that growth of going through that maturity process again and to see the strength of the gospel come back into her life as, you know, from a little child believing in Jesus and then maturing over those couple years and becoming a strong individual, a strong missionary. Mm. And she always still has carried that missionary mantle with her. For the last 5 years, she's like, I just want to serve. I want to share. And the thing about Kendall is, she's still going through this traumatic event that happened to her five years ago. It's not like, you know, she got hit by a car and, you know, she got better 6 months later.
Right.
She still struggles with different things physically. You know, it took her a couple years to get out of the wheelchair and get to a walker and a couple years to get from the walker to a cane. Mm-hmm. And now she uses the cane. Her therapists say, we don't suggest you use the cane because you're still falling down all the time. You really should use the walker or the crutches. And she's like, no, I want to use the cane. I look, you know, I want to be a 25-year-old, a YSA, you know, and I want to use the cane. It just feels better to her. And they're like, okay, but just so you know, we do not suggest that you do that.
Right.
And she does it anyway.
Yeah.
Because she wants to. She wants to progress. She knows she's going to fall down and get back up. And so to just see that that strength that she has to know she's going to be bruised up, but she just keeps going.
Yeah.
And she has times where she falls and emotionally she gets sad, but she bounces back. And when she does get sad and go through those depressive moments, it's not a week or a month. It's, you know, maybe a day. She has a bad day and then she bounces back the next day and she's able to just continue.
Yeah.
So she's a much stronger person now than she was before the accident.
That's tremendous. It's tremendous to be able to see that. I'm sure there's a certain level of pride as a parent, but also awe in your child to just see her continually just progress and be, you know, beat all odds, as it were. Kendall, what's your favorite part of your faith?
That's a hard question to answer.
I know. I'm not going to rush you, though. I learned that.
Favorite part of my faith. My faith, like, it has wavered, but because it's like, why does this have to happen to me? But like I said, like it's strengthened me tremendously, like far beyond than what I had ever imagined.
Yeah.
So just having faith in our Heavenly Father and our Savior has for sure helped me get through this also.
If someone is listening to this and maybe they don't think that they have the courage to go on, what would you say to them?
I'll just suck it up. No, but like they don't have the courage to go on. Heavenly Father doesn't want you to not go on. He doesn't not want you to progress. So, and he wants you to be happy. So he'll put things in your path to make it that way, to make you happy and help you progress. I've experienced that. I've had days where I'm just like in this depressive mood.
Yeah.
But something always comes up that flips my attitude. Like, a friend will message me and talk to me. They'll send me a quick little message. I'm like, I really needed that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's for sure from Heavenly Father. Like, he knows what I need, what each of us need also. So he'll put things into our lives that are needed at that time.
Yeah. I love it. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.